As Bob Cratchit said in the Christmas story, I am quite behind my time, and we don't want to rob those of you who have come on time from this opportunity. Dr. Johnson regrets very much that the flu bug has prevented him from being here this morning to introduce the special convocation that he had arranged, in spite of what yesterday's daily announcements may have indicated. And his desire for this opportunity for a time together is that it be an opportunity to provide some clarification on some apparent misconceptions and non-productive anxiety levels regarding the Profiles of Ministry program. And I'm pleased at his request to take his place this morning. While the bulk of the forum belongs to the administrator of the program, Dr. Gary Schopper, and his on-campus supervisor, Dean David Smith, Dr. Johnson asked that I say a few words about the history of the program, and I'm pleased to do that too. I'm not so sure it's as great a burning issue as we've been led to understand, judging from several empty seats in the auditorium. Anyway, the history of the program goes back well over 10 years, and resides quite properly with the Synod's Call and Roster Committee of the Council of Presidents. You know, in spite of some rather perverse articulations about the nature of the inner call that float around this place from time to time, our church body, in accord with her Lord, who summoned his men with the imperative, "Follow me," still believes, teaches, and confesses that it is the Lord of the church, through his agency of the church, who does the calling and the authorizing and the sending. No one calls himself into the church's public ministry. The church, as Christ's body, does that. And the church seeks to do it in the most responsible manner possible. We have the treasure in earthen vessels, and sometimes the manner is subject to flaws. Anyway, for some years, members of the Council of Presidents had been expressing growing concern over difficulties in congregations in their districts created by certain candidates whose behavior in one form or another was mitigating against rather than promoting the joy and edification of Christ's holy people. However, their tales were many and varied. I'm not going to rehearse them here, but they tended to be mostly narratives in nature and not particularly helpful, therefore, regarding solutions. There seemed to be a problem of some kind, in some instances a most grievous problem, but there wasn't really a plan for a substantive analysis of the problem and certainly not a resolution. And so the Council of Presidents tasked their colleagues on the Call and Roster Committee to make a more substantive analysis of the situation and to prepare some proposals for its resolution. And that resulted, 10 years ago in 1983, in the formation of what was known as the Committee on Pastoral Suitability. Unfortunately, I think it became known as COPS, after the first initial of the title. That was not intended. The committee consisted of district presidents, some active, some retired, the chairman and other members of the BHES, faculty members and administrators from the Synod seminaries and other appropriate personnel. From time to time, they called in expertise as needed, guys like Alan Nouse from Irvine and representatives from various psychological inventory outfits in the country, as well as a former professor from this institution who was employed by the Association of Theological Schools, Dr. David Schuller, who at that time was very busy as the prime developer of what has developed into Profiles of Ministry. The COPS committee dealt with a great many facets of ministerial recruitment, evaluation, preparation, formation, placement, supervision, and so forth and so forth that are not the subject of this forum. But one aspect in particular caught their attention, which does concern us this morning. In a somewhat unscientifically prepared, in my opinion, but nonetheless a very comprehensive and widely distributed survey, there was a theme that was repeated over and over and over again. Among other things, the respondents had been asked to comment on a huge number of items pertaining to ministerial preparation. And it was generally acknowledged by the respondents that the academic preparation provided by the seminaries was quite adequate. In fact, most of them described it as rather excellent. The problem was, according to a bulk of respondents, that a number of candidates recently placed into the districts were ill-equipped to handle interpersonal aspects of the parish ministry. And as a result, they were miserable, their people were miserable, and in the midst of all this misery, the cause of Christ's kingdom was pushed to the background, and the task with which he had commissioned his church was simply not being done. Now, in the midst of mulling all this data over, someone allowed that the seminaries were involved in proficiency exams in Greek and Hebrew and biblical and doctrinal content, and then would design developmental programs to respond to the result of that testing. And the question was raised, could not something similarly be done in the area of interpersonal relations and other personality factors, or was that a total mixing of apples and oranges? That is it possible to ascertain interpersonal and personality factor strengths and weaknesses, and then to design responses to accent the strengths and to shore up the weaknesses or possible areas of concern in order to produce the very best possible product equipped to do the work of the ministry? There was a huge debate over this, to be sure, but the board of directors of the synod directed the BHE to design a position and to hire an administrator, in fact, administrators, to be lodged on the campi of her two seminaries to initiate a program utilizing the profiles, because it was apparent to some at least that the profiles of ministry was designed to a degree to respond to the very type of need that earlier surveys had identified. It was to be a developmental program. Certainly not a punitive or summative program, that is, not something designed to weed out or screen out or eliminate people. That is not, that was not, that never will be the intent of the profiles. Its purpose and intent and its employ on this campus is to assist in the development and the shaping and the forming of seminarians for the public ministry, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, Ephesians 4. Such was and such is the intent of the Profiles of Ministry program. But it's apparent that something's gone somewhat wrong. We've got misunderstanding. We've got anxiety levels that were never intended to exist and which, in my opinion, are quite unconducive to what we want to be about at this institution. We've got misperceptions of profiles that see it designed as some sort of a screening device to eliminate undesirables. And some of the acronyms ascribed to the administrator make him sound more like a world-class wrestling contender than a servant of Christ assigned the responsibility to assist the seminarian in being all that he can be, as the Army commercial says. I don't know as the problem is universal. I read what I consider to be a fine column in a recent issue of the Spectrum called Profile Pass, which reflects a pretty good understanding of what we are about. In fact, the author uses a Bible passage, which always impresses me, and it comes from 1 Timothy, which is not a bad body makeum to throw in your knapsack. But there evidently still resides some rather major misunderstandings. At least one of the things, in our estimate, that did go wrong has been a failure to communicate, to understand. And that's what the purpose of this convocation is all about. We're holding it in order to provide an opportunity for you to hear and to be heard. You know, unless there's something seriously wrong with us, we all tend to fear, we all tend to approach with some apprehension that which we don't understand. And we want to help you understand, and we need you to help us understand or to identify what it is you don't understand. As a major step in that direction, it's my privilege to present Dr. Gary Schopper. And since some of you may not have been presented with his actual credentials, let me say a word or two by way of introduction. Dr. Schopper is a 1962 graduate of the former Senior College, a 1966 graduate of this institution. He attended the Advanced Training Institute for Transactional Analysis in Indianapolis in the late 70s. He has a doctor's degree in pastoral counseling from Christian Theological Seminary. And from 1971 until a few months ago, he served as senior pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church and School in Indianapolis. This summer, he was called by Synod through her Board for Higher Education to serve as advisor on pastoral suitability on this campus. His official supervisor is Dr. David Schmiel, the Director of Theological Education Services at the International Center. Here he reports directly to Dr. Johnson, who is assigned to the Dean of Student Life the responsibility for day-to-day activities. And I've already used up more than my share of time, so I give you Dr. Gary Schopper. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate this opportunity to talk with some of you and clear up some of the issues which we have, and also to hear your concerns and to work with you at this point. When I considered taking this call/appointment, my wife said, "Why do you want to do that? They're all going to hate you." And I haven't found that to be the case at all, but I know that there is fear. When people come into my office and their teeth are chattering, their knees are shaking, that I have seen that a little bit. But what I've enjoyed most of all is seeing and working with some of you fellows, many and the great majority of you are just highly talented people, and who make me think, wow, this is going to be a great church, and it is a great church. There are a couple things that I want to add before I go into just reinterpreting our profile. I want to say, how do we get to this point? And I have to say something to the first-year men, because you have not received your profiles yet. Your profiles are in my office, and I will be setting up a date in which we have a group meeting to present you with your profiles and to explain the profiles to you. But I also want to backtrack for just a moment and say how I perceive what happened with the presentation of the profiles to the SEM2 class. I thought I was doing this great thing for the SEM2 class by getting an outside consultant in to interpret the profiles, because Dr. Francis Lonsway has been working with profiles of ministry for 17 years. He's an expert in the area. I'm a fledgling in the area. Now, this will be great. Unfortunately, he's a Franciscan Roman Catholic, and when he interpreted the profile, he did not interpret it in the way in which we as Lutherans would understand it, and therefore some of the fellows went away not understanding exactly what the profile meant for them. And secondly, they went away not understanding what my interpretation, my personal interpretation of the profile was, and consequently there was some apprehension about what the profile ultimately meant. This combined with the fact that no one really, or very few fellows, came in to ask me about it, but instead started going to their wives and talking about it, talking with each other, going to the dean, going to the president, going to their fieldwork supervisor, and the string goes on. didn't help. And, you know, when I was in the parish, I used Matthew 18 as an administrative way of functioning simply because it reduces stress. If somebody has a problem with a teacher in the classroom, I say to them, you go talk to that teacher. If that doesn't work, then you go talk to the principal. If that doesn't work, then maybe you come and talk to me or go to the Board of Ed. But we'll get the thing solved. But you start where Matthew 18 talks about starting. That's one-on-one assertiveness to the person who's responsible for what's happening. And I would appreciate it when you have a problem with some of these things, you come and talk to me, and maybe we can get a little bit further in this situation. Now, the second thing I want to point out, and I have to backtrack and say a little bit about what my job description is. My job description, there's three parts to it. Number one is to evaluate the suitability of candidates. That's it. And basically that's there just so that we make sure and ensure, the church wants to ensure to itself that it has done everything possible to get good, solid men of God in the field. And I think that's really neat. And the second part of my job is to provide counsel for the candidates, to be a formative influence for you. But if you're so afraid of me that you're not going to work with me, then obviously that won't work. So somehow we have to get around that, and we have to get around it together. And the third thing is I'm supposed to provide reports to the seminary faculty and to the Council of Presidents as to how I am doing, how the program fits in with the seminary program, and how it fits in with the church at large. There was a study done by the Alban Institute. The Alban Institute works with ongoing pastoral studies, and they did a study of outplacement as to why pastors failed in the field. And of the failed pastors, from their report, they said 11% of them failed because of professional incompetency. They didn't have administrative abilities or communicative abilities. Somehow they didn't make it. But 46% failed because of interpersonal difficulties. They were either perceived as too distant or aloof or passive, or they were just perceived as too contentious or dictatorial or authoritative. And that was far ahead of the incompetency problem. So consequently, if I can be helpful in forming and helping you to be a better pastor, then I will feel as though I did well to leave my beautiful parish and come here and serve the church at the seminary. I also want to say, I try to do it from a Christocentric point of view. I see every one of you as a potential gift of God to the church. You are potential apostles and prophets and pastors and teachers. And that the inner moving of God's Spirit, which was God coming to you, is God's way of saying that the church will go on, and that is my job as part of this system to teach you with the deep respect that you deserve. I do want to clear up a couple of misunderstandings. I am not replacing the PEI, probably never will replace the PEI. I'm not a member of the faculty. I'm a member of the BAT staff. Consequently, I don't function and I don't check on your theology, although I listen to it, and I obviously would have some concern about it, but that's not my job. My job is to take the personhood issues that come from Scripture and be concerned about whether or not those are in your personal life. This is very important, because as I've worked with pastors in the field who have burned out, the interesting thing is that whenever they get to the burnout point, they all start preaching law-centered sermons. They can't preach gospel anymore because their personhood is too involved, they are too subjectively involved, and they can't do it. You should hear some of these guys when they start burning out. They get in the pulpit and they're cynical, they're controlling, they're legalistic. You don't even want to listen to them. And the purity of the gospel is lost. Not because they didn't study their Greek and Hebrew and their exegetics and their homiletics, but because their unresolved issues stop them from preaching the gospel. And that's detrimental to the church. Now, there are some denominations who have worked very hard to screen and to work and to figure out how do we get the best potential seminarians, and they've done this by using psychological instruments. The Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory has been used by seminaries across the line denominations for many, many years. In fact, there are huge stats now that have been compiled on the MMPI and its use among seminary students. And when I went to the seminary years ago, it was a standardized thing here at Concordia Seminary. In a recent study by Newton Maloney and Laura Majewski at Fuller Theological Seminary, they took some of these stats. And they took the scores of the students at the seminary, and then they tested the effectiveness of the pastors in the field, which is also a rather difficult thing to test. But the interesting thing they found was that there was no direct correlation between the MMPIs and the effectiveness of pastors. That using psychological instruments to decide what type of pastor a person could or could be was not working. And basically it was because the MMPI was not designed to decide what kind of personality that you have, although it does show highs and lows of different aspects of your personality. It was designed to screen out pathology. There was a second mistake that many seminaries have made, and that is the mistake to think that within the complexity of the human being, we can figure out what a perfect pastor might be. I still hear that around. How can we decide what the perfect pastor is going to be? What should he be? People ask me that sometimes. What do you think the perfect profile of a pastor is? There is no perfect profile of a pastor. In 1 Timothy 3, the gifts and recommendations of what a personhood issue should be of a pastor are there, but we're all different. According to Myers-Briggs, we're 16 different types. Every one of those types can succeed, but we'll do it in a different manner. Now, some of you had trouble with the casebook study when you went through the casebook because it's a forced choice concept. You say, well, there were choices there, but my choice didn't happen to be there, you see. And what you're saying is, my theology and the way I think and the way I go at issues was not presented. When you have a forced choice casebook, that is a little bit of a problem because you and I are all so different in our personalities. Even though we may have the same theology, we may solve a problem from one way or another way or a third way or a fourth way, and each time the problem might be solved. Consequently, it is very important in my position that I don't squelch the Holy Spirit or that I don't act as though a person can't be a creative person. Somebody came into my office and he said, you know, being at the seminary, I feel as though somehow my creativity has been squelched. I said, gee, that's too bad. Because you have to take the theology and your creativity is the beautiful gift of God that can take this theology and make it meaningful for people out there. Consequently, when I think and work with you, number one, I'm concerned about the things that are going to keep you from being a good pastor, the negative aspects. If they are too bad, they may have to be screened out. But basically, the negative aspects are the aspects that you need to work on to balance yourself out. But the positives and how you work out in the complexity of your personality is up to you because each one of us is different. Now, I want to just say a word about 1 Timothy 3, if I might. 1 Timothy 3, if you go through that listing, and I got to admit that when I was your age, I went through the 1 Timothy 3 list, and I said, well, I'm not a drunk. I have one wife. I'm probably okay. The rest of those things I can do, you know. But when you really study 1 Timothy 3 and go into those personhood issues, the issues are very interesting. The concept of being irreproachable is the fact that somehow your personality does not open you up for somebody taking a hold and taking away the ministry from you or taking away the sincerity of the purity of the gospel you preach. To be temperate or sober to me is to be straight with people and to be not manipulative, to be honest and forthright and you know, man on man. Cosmias. To be orderly or dignified or well-ordered, getting your tasks done but doing it respecting people. hospitable, not always opening up your house to people because we just don't do that much in our society, but opening up your office and saying, come on in because I care about you. And to me, that's one of the basic things of being a good pastor. If the people don't think you love them, it is hard. And especially since God is love, and you know the foundation of the theology. We don't have to talk about that. Plague taste, not given to violence. A PA case, lenient, kindly, forbearing, you know, putting the things together. Now, having said those things, I want to say, gee, it would be great if we could have an instrument that would somehow measure some of those things, and that's what the profile ministry is intended to do. The Midwest Career Development Center, which does nothing but test seminarians, has come up with the following stats on seminarians, and I want to share them with you. According to the Midwest Career Development Center and Dr. Ron Brushweiler, whom I interviewed a year ago because I was working on a district committee that was working with pastors and teachers who needed counseling, has come up with the following stats when they go out to seminaries. They say 10% of the students they consider to be unsuitable for ministry because their personhood issues are too unresolved. 20% of the students will have some problem in ministry, according to the Career Development Center. 30% of the students are going to make good pastors, good solid pastors. And 40% of the students are going to make outstanding pastors or excellent pastors. When I came into this position, I kept those stats in the back of my mind. I know the screening process that already goes on here with the dean of students, with the admissions committee. And I'm aware that the stats for unsuitable are probably much lower than that, maybe 5%. But that there may be some that may not make it. And I'd rather tell them now than to pick up the pieces with them 4 or 5 years from now when they have a child and a wife all sitting there in public view and they are failing in the ministry. In any event, can we do something formatively to help ourselves? And that is my job. Now, Profiles of Ministry, when it was originally created, they did not go out, as some of you think, to the lady and say, what do you want this guy to be? Because obviously, that would not be accepted by the rest of us. We do not function that way. We are not a populist theology. We are a scriptural theology and a confessional theology. The first thing they did, and granted, we're talking about a non-denominational group. Dr. David Schuller from the LCMS was there, who was at the heart of it all. He spent 5 or 6 years of his life just writing the thing and developing it. And the other two people who were there wrote the case book, another Lutheran from the ELCA, now the ELCA belongs with, too, and then Dorothy Williams, who was a Methodist person, and she wrote the case book. But anyhow, when they started out with the Scripture, and they started out with all the characteristics they could glean from Scripture as to what a minister and a Christian should be who would have that position. They came up with 2,000 items. Now, I couldn't do that, because I don't think that way. They must have been how Myers-Briggs would say, they must have been sensates to come up with that many items. I can't come up with that many items. Anyhow, then they took those 2,000 items, gave them to seminary professors, Sem4 students, alumni, and denominational executives, and some laity, and said, what do you think about these? Are they important? They reduced them down to 440 items. They gave those 440 items to a larger group of people of the same profile makeup, and they finally came up with 64 criteria, which were empirically structured and inclusive to those denominations participating. And the Lutherans, we had our share in the project, perhaps more than our share, if you would demographically figure it out. The summary that they came up with when they finally came up with these criteria, if any one denomination thought a criterion was important and nobody else did, they threw it out. They made it across the board inclusive. Then the next thing they just did is they worked very hard to design an instrument that would be inclusive, but that would be non-prescriptive, that would be descriptive. And then the denomination would take the instrument and they would have the right to make it prescriptive, but the instrument itself would be descriptive. And that's what happened with Profiles of Ministry. that's where we got the casebook. So you have the casebook, and all of a sudden as you go through it, you realize, well, that doesn't fit my thinking or my theology, but it is inclusive. And then you get all done, and you realize, well, my profile may be skewed a little bit this way or skewed a little bit that way, but there is an overall nature to it that can be helpful. At this point, I'd like to pass out two items to you, please. One is the Class 2 SEM 2 profile, and the other item is the criterion referenced, the criteria as they are referenced according to their importance in denominations, across denominational lines. Now, I went by the book. I always start, whenever I do something the first time, I always go by the book. And then I figure, if there is some way in which it needs to be improved, I will improve it. I went by the book, so you never got the SEM 2 profile. Because this thing is not entitled to think this way. But the only way I think some of you are going to understand it is if you get the SEM 2 profile, so I'm distributing it. The way this thing is designed is that you're supposed to take your profile, you take the criteria and how important they are, and you just figure out where you're at. But I'm going to start out with the class profile and just relate to it because this has caused a little bit of a problem for me since this. The Association of Theological Schools makes no comparison among any denominations. I can't get stats to show how we compare with other Lutherans. I can't get longitudinal studies. I can't get any of those things because they don't keep any of those stats. They just say, it's descriptive, you make it prescriptive, but since you make it prescriptive of your theology, we make no comparisons with anybody else. But we can compare ourselves with each other, and that's what this is. Now, I just want to go through real quickly, for those of you who have not come in to interview me, just so I can say a word about some of these categories to bring you up to speed so that when you come in for your interview, you'll kind of know where you're at. Personal characteristics. You can see where the class profile, the average is an X. The arrows on either side, it's not a standard deviation. The arrows on either side are 25% on either side, and the brackets on the far side of the arrows are the other 25% on either end. So you see here the class mean for being responsible and respectable of people and working out tasks and getting things done in a dignified, orderly manner, kusmias, where that comes in. The RESP, your commitment to people, keeping personal commitments to people, that is in the possibly category. And you'll notice that the RESP and the FLEX are not above each other exactly. If they were, then that indicates that there is not a coordination of brain and theology and body and life. The LIMT, willingness to apologize for mistakes, is in the likely category. The ICAR, this involvement in caring, this hospitality, hey, you're good people, I care about you, come on in, is in the likely category. And the PRCO, the perceptive counseling, is in the likely category. And if you compare that with under the conversionist ministry, the THCO, those two are supposed to be in the same area, otherwise. Well, you know, Francis Lonsway mentioned or talked a little bit about that, so we may be willing to make more, give more scripture than people are willing to listen to. But what I want to say at the outset is that every one of you have a different profile, and that's the idea, because you're all different. And my profile is different from yours, and that's okay. The family perspective. Some of the fellows went off the scale on the right side, and some of the fellows almost went off the scale on the left side for the family, putting the family first, and the MNOF putting precedent or your work first, and those two cannot and are not to be balanced, or you are indecisive, so one normally is to the right and one normally is to the left. Your PIAT, your personal devotional, is normally an indication of how satisfied you are with your personal devotional life. And some of the people that were to the left, then I basically they're not satisfied with their devotional life. The PROV, I kind of throw that one out. It's simply because the question, the casebook study on which it was based, confused first article and second article and had a universalistic question in it or response in it, which skewed the whole thing. So, and that's supposed to be a measure of the way in which we understand God to be mysteriously merciful and kind and benevolent beyond our comprehension. The more you define theology and the more you compartmentalize the different aspects of theology, as Lutheran theology does at its best, as I understand it, the more you move to the left. I've also found students who are way on the left in the very unlikely category to be some students who do a great amount of existentialistic type thinking, asking a lot of why questions, dealing with issues, philosophical issues on an inner level, and I encourage them to use that in a sermon as a law basis, because other people to show the difficulty, the struggle in life as a law basis, which then you can apply gospel to, because there are other people in the pew who struggle with those same type of issues. The potential negatives, the SELF, and that is one which was misunderstood among us, and it's not said well in the interpretive manual, because it starts out by saying, this shows the SELF. If you have a heightened SELF, it shows that you have a high respect for the office of the minister, and our first response is, well, that's crazy. We all have a high respect for the office of the ministry. Therefore, how can you say that could be any type of potential negative? What it means is this. Theologically, there are ways in which you stratify how high a respect you have for the holy ministry, and ours is about at the top of the Protestants. This is basically a Protestant instrument. Ours is about at the top. Okay. On the other hand, there is a degree to which you and I can be controlling people, and our need to be controlling, which can be a compulsively driven out of fear or some other reason. Our need to be a controlling person can unite with this high concept of the office of the ministry and make a dynamically autocratic pastor. And that has been a little bit one of the problems we've had in Synod, where pastors go in matters of adiaphoron, they claim to have divine wisdom also, beside matters of law and gospel. Anyhow, because we have such a high concept of ministry, I skew that back a little bit, and I say that universalistic question in there, we'll skew that back a little bit. So we'll put the SELF back about to the line or just before the line and say that's where the class average is. And you have to be a little bit beyond what this is to actually have it elevated. Your PADV is your manipulative score, and I've had people sit there and tell me they are not manipulative and then try to manipulate me before they leave the room. Come on, you guys. There's a PRTC, which is your defensive score, and I always know when I look at that whether or not how open the person is going to be to this whole business, because it's a defensive score. Now, I have to tell you guys, if anybody would have done this when I was at school and at seminary at your age, I would have been upset. I don't like people toying with my inner personality. And if you're upset, some of you, I can understand, because I would have been upset. I would have done it, but I wouldn't have liked it, because I don't like people toying with my inner thinking. I'm a private person in some ways also. But these potential negatives show how much you would convey functionally of your unresolved issues onto the congregation. Now, I've had guys come in who I look at them and I say, you have low self-esteem. I can figure it out by looking at you. You know, come on, you can do something about it. Why don't you get yourself together a little bit and get a little more confidence? And when you go out there, the people will listen to you, because you will demand their respect by your presence. But they have no potential negatives. They're all to the left. What that says is, they inner struggle, but they don't project out. When a person has high potential negatives, what it says is, they're projecting out all their inner struggles. And they're going to make that congregation at times a real mess because they're going to project all their stuff onto the congregation, and the congregation will say, "What? I don't understand, but I don't feel right working with this pastor." They won't understand it. They won't. Now, every now and then, somebody will come in and they say, "I have a score I don't understand." And then we try to understand it together. And 9 times out of 10, we can understand it. There are some times when they say to me, "I don't understand the score," and I look at them and I say, "Well, looking at you and seeing you sitting here and thinking about it and talking with you and going by what I know from what you said at your interview, I don't understand it either. So I guess we'll throw that score out." Because you have to remember that every inventory, even the best of tests, are normally only 80% reliable. And this has a 70-80% reliability. So you have a 20% unreliability. So every now and then, if you get to a bad spot, you just say, "Well, you're the fifth person in today. We'll let that one go," you know, see. And I think that's what we have to do at times with some of these scores, and not get so worried about them. Okay. Now, on the right-hand side, your ecclesiastical ministry. Many of you went off the scale because you love your church so, and that's the way we are at the Missouri Synod. Francis Alonzo, he didn't understand that, but that's the way we are at the Missouri Synod. We love our church, okay? We fight for it, and we love it. Liturgy, I don't worry about that one. So, you know, all I tell the guys, don't get sloppy. But, you know, that's another area. It's not my area. Conversionist ministry is basically developed for the Southern Baptists, so it goes on and on and on about evangelism. But the first line shows how much you're motivated and believe in evangelism, and the second line shows whether or not you do evangelism now and whether or not it's really important to you now. And the guys that have been through dialogue evangelism, they start moving up on that chart. But the other fellows, we're not designed as a seminary. We don't take people out in busloads today and have them witness. Perhaps so I tell guys, "Well, then work on that in your vicarage. Go work on it in your vicarage." Okay. Getting on to social justice ministry. The first line is how politically active you were before. The second line is how politically active you intend to be in your ministry. And our average, class average, sits on number 1 out of 50. See? And I say, "Yeah, that's what we teach here. That's what the faculty teach. I'm not a member of the faculty. That's what the faculty teaches." Fine. See? Causes is how willing you are to speak out on unpopular causes. It kind of is kind of a risk-taking, gutsy thing, how much of a risk-taker you are. But in ministry, you can't be outspoken on a lot of issues anyway, so you know, that's life. The MORL is not in your interpretive manual, and it means how it's a special category for evangelicals, Missouri synods, and others who are not political activists, but you give them abortion, homosexuality as teachers in public schools, or the AIDS problem, and you're going to get a response. And the final category, community and congregational ministry, well, the whole class is OPRS to the left of unlikely, and that's concerned about the oppressed of the world. But in the casebook study, it talked about being concerned for the downtrodden, the unjust, but kind of it couched some of it in political terms. And I know that for some of you, when you say the word unjust, there are certain code words that you have an immediate response or a knee-jerk response. And I think that, well, that's what happened with that one, because I doubt that we do not have concern for the oppressed, but that we are not great political activists for the oppressed. That's our position. So that's kind of, I just kind of wanted to go over briefly the profile with you. The rest of them, I think, just fall into categories. Now, at this point, I think that I should sit down, and I believe that Dean Smith has a word or two to say, and then we'll receive comments or questions.
Yeah, just a couple of words. The common question that has come to me is, how is the instrument profiles of ministry going to be used in the certification process? And that is very important, and I know that certification is important. That's what we're all about here. And when you say the word certification to students, you can see their foreheads tense almost instantaneously. And to some degree, naturally so. But let me say a couple of things so that you understand this. First of all, I want to make this statement. No student is going to be asked to leave this institution solely on the basis of profiles of ministry. because we are not using this instrument in that fashion. Now, that's not to say that a student who's having serious problems, that may not be one piece of the data. But solely on the basis of profiles of ministry, no student is going to be asked to leave this institution. When you are finished with all the profiles of ministry in your fourth year, Dr. Schopper is going to dictate a memo on each and every one of you about profiles of ministry that will go in your file. We have discussed this, and before that memo is placed in the file, he's going to share it with you so that you're going to know exactly what is placed in your file concerning profiles of ministry. But let me say again, no student will be denied certification solely on the basis of profiles of ministry. And I fully expect in the years to come that there will be times when Dr. Schopper will recommend that certification not be given to a particular candidate, and yet the faculty will still certify that individual because there is a larger picture. There is more information. On the other hand, there may come a time when Dr. Schopper would recommend certification, and the faculty, with the rest of the information, would decide not to certify the man. So what I'm saying to you is simply, profiles of ministry is one aspect, just like a vicarage report, or a field education report, or your grades. It's simply one thing that's going to be taken into consideration in the process. So, that's how it will work with certification. My attitude towards profiles of ministry is we have a great many tools and resources at this seminary to help you develop academic skills and to learn the theology that you need to know. But one of the things that we lack is the ability to help you grow as individuals personally in your interpersonal skills. Profiles of ministry is going to give us some ability to help you with that. And that is what we are about. Simply helping you grow in one more area so that you will be that much better when you graduate from this institution and become a pastor in the church. So that's really all I need to say. Maybe just a minute. Dean Vogel, would you say a word? There have also been questions about how it will be used in the placement process. Could you say a word to that?
Well, this is sort of before the fact because, the data isn't here. One of the concerns, going back to what I indicated historically, was the concept of square peg and round hole. I see in the placement process, I see the major utilization of the data, profiles of ministry applying to that situation that I would describe this way. When we have something more substantive in the way of identification of strengths and weaknesses in terms of personality factors and the other things being measured, one can avoid. Sometimes a situation hasn't turned out because how in the world did you end up putting that individual into that situation? All of the dynamics there are turn out to be, in retrospect, things that exacerbate the areas of concern and don't allow a person to lead from the areas of strength. I would see that as the primary utilization of the data in terms of placement. I can't really envision another way at this point of employing placement because you've already addressed the certification issue. So I would see it as a tool, as we have employed a number of tools to assist us in doing a better job. As Lutherans, we believe you know, that the Spirit operates through means. On one level, we're talking about means of grace, but the vehicles that the Spirit uses are those in whom the treasure resides. And everything that we can do that avoids the utilization of means like dartboards and drawing straws or just pointing to something, I think is far more consistent with what we mean theologically by the employment of means. And I would see this as another means that can be employed under God's grace, employed by those who have the mind of Christ to do a better job in terms of the ministry that God has given to his church to be provided to the people he loves.
Okay, the floor is yours. You can address your questions to any of us in particular, or we'll just decide who can answer it best.
I really don't have a question. It's more of a statement that I would like to make. First of all, I was glad to see your willingness to admit that the communication in the beginning was perhaps a problem. But I also want to make a comment in the fact that the perception, I think, is that this is something that's coming from the top down, and I don't really think that's true. I know it came from congregations which were hurt not only doctrinally, but also because of the personal relationships that the pastors have in the congregations. And I think it's that we ought to realize that even though sometimes it's hard to analyze ourselves and see where our weaknesses are, what a blessing it is to have a church body with people in it who not only are concerned about doctrine, as they proved in the 70s, you know, but are also concerned that the personal skills are there for the pastors so that the whole church is edified. And so even though sometimes it is difficult and to analyze yourself and say, well, this is something that I need to improve on, if you take a look at it as blessing the whole church, then I hope that the students will realize that this is something that it can be a blessing. And it's something that isn't just happening here either, because I also know districts are in a process of having members of the congregation fill out evaluations on their pastors and sending it back to the district office. Or also the pastors are having to fill out essays on various questions and situations. And it's something that needs to be an ongoing process. You know, we talk about when you get out, you don't just stop reading and learning that way. But it's also got to be true with our personal skills, too. And so in that sense, I guess I applaud this, even though at the beginning it caused some stress and tension.
Thank you. I'm Sim 4, so my interest may be a little bit different than some here. One of the roles I see for myself when I go into the pastoral ministry is to direct other young men to this institution for the study of pastoral ministry, so I want to be more knowledgeable. I heard being said that there are instruments to help when you're deficient in the academic area, and I've heard you allude to this help that's forthcoming in the person, the wholeness. Can you be more specific as, let's say there's a problem identified, you don't send them to a class on being a better person. What specifically do you have in mind to work with this person who may be destined for some problems?
Well, there are different places. I passed out a sheet to the SEM2s, and I didn't bring any along today, but there are what I've devised. And remember, you have to remember this process is developmental. So we're developing it as we go along, to try and give the students some options for growth-oriented places. And when I'm in the process of developing, first of all, there's Dr. Barber to work with intense interpersonal issues. And then I am in the process of setting up five different groups. One is integrative growth group in which you just kind of work on your personal issues as to how they relate to your field work, to your life at the seminary, whatever you want to work on in that group, and Dr. Barber will be running that group. There will be a flexibility group, and this group will work with awareness techniques. And either I or Chaplain Joel Hempel will be running that group, or together we might run it. But it'll just be flexibility techniques and awareness techniques. It's basically for people who have trouble being fluid and whole. The third group is an assertiveness group for people who have trouble with their assertiveness and are either passive or aggressive, but not appropriately assertive. And I will be taking care of that group. The fourth group is a perceptive listening group for people who have difficulty being, or who would like to increase their skill at attentive listening. And the fifth group is for people who would like to spiritually work on their devotional life, and I want to do something that I think will be, to me, experimentally interesting, and that is that according to the Myers-Briggs, you have a certain type of devotion that you like more so than others, a certain style of doing your devotion that's different from other people according to your personality type. And if we could figure out with those people what they by nature, what their personality attunes to in how they do their personal devotion life, it would probably be easier for them for their whole life. And I thought that would be an interesting thing to try out and see if that's helpful. But anyhow, I'm working on setting up groups so that people have a place to work on issues. If they want to work on them, they're not forced to work on them, but if they want to work on them, they have a place.
This is for Dr. Schopper. As far as the evaluation that will be sent out while we're on vicarage, I guess the five individuals at the parish that they are to fill out about us, I was wondering if you could comment on what type of questions, which persons will be selected, and how that will impact our evaluation in our fourth year.
Okay. The profile of ministry has a second stage to it. That's stage two. And it's supposed to be an integrative type of stage for the fourth-year student. For the first-year student, this really take place the first year, but this year it was first and second because I'm new here. For the first year, you have the 30-minute structured interview, taped interview, plus the written case book. They go into a computer scanner. You get out a profile. For stage two, the way Profiles of Ministry has set it up, you again give a case book. You again give a structured interview at fourth year level, but you also have a field observation report from the vicarage experience. And what Profiles of Ministry recommends is that this report be sent to five people in the congregation, and the five that I have identified are the pastor, the chairman of the congregation, the chairman of the board of elders, the chairman of the board of education, and one other person. It's important to get test-wise speaking, it's important to get at least five responses in so that they will filter out, because you will have three solid ones then out of the five normally. And then those reports, if this would be accepted, and I'm still working with Professor Nielsen on this to see if we can work in it as part of the vicarage program, but if this would be is accepted by him, then those three things will go into a computer scanner at the fourth year level, and you'll get when your profile comes back, instead of just having X's on it, it'll have those, there'll be about five or six areas that will be field observation reports, and they will show the brackets of how the breadth of those five observations and where the average was, how they rated you. And I'm not sure, I'd have to look again to see exactly what the ratings were. I know one is on technique of speaking. I don't think it has to do with theology of sermon. I think it's more technique of speaking. Did you project? Was you well prepared? Did it make sense? Was it helpful? That type of thing. More practical questions. Another is on teaching, and I don't know what the others are. I'd have to look at them again. I will tell you this. One thing that happens when you go out on vicarage is you are in the hands of the vicarage supervisor. 95% of the time, that is great. 5% of the time, your personalities may not get along, and you may get a lower grade because of it. This report that I received really has nothing to do with the vicarage report. But if you have a bad experience, it might help to balance out the perspective on you, because it'll get lay input as to perspective besides pastoral perspective. The other thing I want to say is this, and that is, the only thing wrong with field observation reports is that they are historically always too high, because the people in the parish give us better ratings than we give each other, and even vicar supervisors give better ratings than professors. Basically, I personally think it's because you get subjectively involved with them, you're their friend, and you don't like to doing your friend.
This is for Dr. Schopper. Being a first-year student and getting in on the ground floor of this whole process, would you work with us developing goals individually?
Yes.
As far as the whole process?
Right. Okay. Right. It's an individualized thing. You get your profile, you take the goal sheets and go home and work on them, then you and I sit down together and we talk about the goals, and if you need to revise them, then I give you another sheet and you take them back and revise them, and then you come back and I approve them. But basically, I'm trying to help you focus on what the profile of what the profile says, and as long as you and I agree that the profile is accurate, then I want you to focus on those issues.
My name is Joe Meyer. After spending 10 years in parish ministry, I too want to applaud the church for doing what it can to help pastors to be better pastors. And that's just my pat on the back to you guys before I slam you. But
you're a nice guy, you know.
In reference to your Matthew 18 exhortation, I must admit two things. One, I think, is corporate, and I, of course, don't pretend to speak for the whole of the brethren, but the other one is personal. There is a saying which, since you attended this seminary, I'm sure you have heard, cooperate and graduate, and I think that there was some fear about coming to you, and I think you know that.
Sure.
Second of all, I didn't come straight to you, Dr. Schopper, because I was angry. I was angry with what Dr. Lonsway did. He came to my house and insulted my children, and he said things about the Lutheran Church that I felt he had no business saying, because he's not a Lutheran, or at least an LCMS person. And I was offended by what he said. And I will talk to you when I come in for my personal interview, but I want you to understand that it was not because I needed to run here and there and everywhere. It was because I needed to vent something before I came to you, so I didn't say something I shouldn't. So that's it.
Thank you, Joe.
Since this will be in our permanent file, will this be available to congregations during the call process?
No. I have two clients. The first client is the church, which has the synod, which has created this position. The second client is you. And, I told the faculty yesterday when I was talking with them that I haven't developed yet exactly what I'm going to put in the file, because I'm so concerned that it's protective of you. That if you work on an issue which may be an important issue to you, but it's not really that important in the overall scheme of things, I don't want to identify that issue specifically and have someone else pick up the report and think that you are a very deficient person because you're working on a certain issue. So it would seem to me that I have to develop a way of saying things that indicates that you're either a growth-oriented person and they are open to development, or that I see you as a well-integrated person, or a person who indeed exhibits the characteristics of 1 Timothy 3, or that I say it in some other way that is positive as possible, and protective of you, and yet also is on target. And I will work to do that. But no one has access to the profiles except with your written permission, and as far as these evaluative placement reports, they are not accessed by the church either, are they?
No.
No, they're not accessed by the church.
I'm just curious, not only for the profiles in ministry, but the other evaluative procedures which happen on campus. Just a question regarding what's the potential for their use for affirmation? I found that to be, you know, an important aspect of what we do. But, you know, I haven't gone through a theological interview or just this I've gone through really so far in field work and institutional and so forth. But I think that aspect of affirmation needs to be addressed.
There are many times, probably more than some of you know, where I get phone calls about students. And at that point, it is my responsibility to look into the matter. And I can tell you that because I know most of you, and because of the positive things that are in your files, that's very easy. I can defend you and become your advocate to these people. You never know about these things, okay? But they do occur, and those kinds of affirmations, Jonathan, are very helpful and enable us to say to the church, you know, and that's your protection too. So if one person doesn't like you, we've got the data to say that's an ad hominem opinion. The data clearly indicates this man is ready for the ministry. So we do use that very much to affirm your suitability and readiness for the ministry.
Given the fact that you do not have any longitudinal studies to refer to or any, I hate to use the word, norming things so that we can know what the validity or if this is a valid instrument for our particular synod, I'd just like to encourage you to start such a study based on the norms that you're finding for each of these classes, because it won't do us any good to if we're using an instrument that which isn't reflecting success in the ministry long term. And I'm concerned that we don't, I mean, it's better than the MMPI, granted, but if we don't really know, we're kind of just doing this because the Synod wants us to have an instrument.
Thank you, I appreciate that. We do have the norms here from 87 and 88 when it was given 87 and 88 to the students. So I have those, and I have done some norm referencing with those class profiles, which has been helpful. But I will be developing some other longitudinal studies over the years, God willing. Also, I wanted to have a follow-up comment to Joe Meyer's comment, and that is, I don't know if I made it clear at the beginning, but I do apologize for some of the misinformation or lack of information that you received and for the apprehension that some of you had due to the fact that you did not have the enough information available, and I apologize for that.
I appreciate there was a lot of tension, at least the first meeting. I wasn't there for the second, but one question about the family perspective. All of these are evaluating our potential weak spots for ministry. Now, we're not in ministry yet, but based upon who we are and where we're going. Family perspective, all the single students got asterisks on them. We were asked to skip them. Especially as these apply to ministry, will you consider giving these questions to us even though we are single? Because if we're going to have problems based on our perceptions now, wouldn't it be a wise thing to at least have that factored in, granted that we're not married?
Possibly. I'll have to look at that. I know Francis Lansbury said that the test indicated that you could answer them if you'd wanted to, and I have to go back and see exactly what the inventory said at that point. But I think the basic idea was that you have not been, you are not in the middle of experiencing that yet, so that perhaps it would be best just to forestall that. But that's a possibility to consider. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Schaffer, this is for you also. I'm just a little bit concerned, I guess, about a system of checks and balances. It seems to me like this is a one person's opinion on a lot of things. Like you were talking about throwing out whole questions or whole situations because the question was phrased with incorrect theology or something like that. Do you solely make this on your own personal opinion? And, you know, because that could have a lot of consequences depending on who's here. You know, you're not going to be here all the time and no telling who's going to get in. And usually there's a system of some sort of checks and balances. And I was just wondering what is set up for that.
Well, thank you. Yesterday at the faculty meeting, I said to the faculty, now, this is an inclusive, descriptive instrument. I am the one making it prescriptive. So I interpreted to the faculty this profile, and I said, if you see that you do not believe that any of these aspects are not coming through with scriptural and confessional understanding, then it's important that you tell me that, because I want to interpret this as much as possible in a scriptural and confessional manner. But I have to admit, I am the one interpreting it, and that I have the 87, 88 ones to reference it, but basically that I am doing it, yes. But on the other hand, I'm not sure that my interpretation of it is just an opinion. It seems to me that it's a very enlightened conclusion about how this thing operates, and I don't feel as though it is not even-handed. But I will admit that it is my perspective.
One more.
I also have a question for Dr. Schopper. How do you manage the tension between the role of counselor, where you have to protect our confidentiality, but also you want to promote an openness for us to come at you, and the tension between your role as supervisor, or that which interprets our reports and gives reporting on us? Usually that's kind of an ethical conflict among psychologists, that they can't both be supervisor and counselor at the same time. You know, usually you refer that out. And you're kind of functioning in both roles, and I was just wondering how you're managing that for the benefit of the students. Thank you.
That is one reason why I'm considering getting outside people to help with some of these groups, and that is that the problem is that people get too fearful of you to really say what they need to say and to work on what they need to work on. It is a difficult role. It is not impossible, but it is difficult, and one in which I will have to then use other people. So in other words, I said, well, if people really have issues that I want them to work on, I want them to work on them with Dr. Barber or some other person, and basically because of that very conflict. Besides the time issue, they only have so much time, but because of that very conflict. I would also hope that the students eventually would see, and what it does, if you do have two positions, you have to create a lot of trust, and I would hope eventually the trust level would be of such that students would feel comfortable in working with me on an in-depth basis, which some students have and are doing, but that more students would feel that level of trust.
Quickly.
Yes, real quick follow-up. You said just a minute ago that you felt that your analysis was pretty objective and fair and everything, but I'm just wondering if there is a situation where it isn't, and there becomes an uproar, what is your, or who are you responsible to if we would have a situation where the person in your position would be abusing that position? Where does it end? Where what proper course? Is there a system set up where there is a proper channel? There is.
And that is that you would come to me. Because at that point, if you perceive a problem where you are being unfairly treated anywhere on this campus, you need to let me know. Because at that point, I become your advocate. And at that point, we would deal with that situation and, if necessary, take it to the president likewise. So there are checks and balances here. No one is a law unto himself on this campus. It simply doesn't exist. There are checks and balances throughout the system. Well, we thank you for coming, and we hope that this has helped you and answered your questions, and hopefully you'll be able to help your brethren in dealing with this, and we hope that it will be a blessing to you and to the church. Thank you.